The Silk Road was once the great meeting place between the East and the West. It was a network of ancient trading routes that wound through China and India, across the mountains of Central Asia and the plains of Iran, and over to the Mediterranean. All kinds of treasures were carried across Asia. Jade and gems, incense and spices, linens, and, of course, silk. This part of the world has always fascinated British travel writer Colin Thubron. He made his first journey along the Silk Road nearly 20 years ago. Recently, he felt compelled to go back, so he spent 8 months trekking some 7,000 miles, traveling by truck, car, donkey cart, and camel. And he's written a book about his journey called Shadow of the Silk Road.
I've always been drawn to the countries that we've traditionally in the West been brought up to fear. This part of the Silk Road, the far northwest, is a sort of controversial Chinese area. And then, of course, there was Central Asia, the old Soviet Union, and Islam itself. And I went really hoping to follow something that would connect all those elements that had always interested me. And it was the Silk Road that connected them.
The Silk Road is really the connection between East and West. Is that historically what draws us to that, do you think?
Yeah, it was an astonishing, much the greatest and most influential land trade route in history. It started well before the time of Christ and ended perhaps 500 years ago, spanning the whole breadth of Asia from China to the Mediterranean.
There is a flowing back and forth from East to West. Sometimes it goes one way and sometimes it goes the other. The Mongols came east to west. The Romans tried, I guess, to go west to east.
Yes, it's almost always a flow east to west, the one we're sort of familiar with in Western history, that the barbarism comes out of the east, out of Asia, whether it's Huns or Mongols, and people sort of feared this great hinterland. And the people who went west didn't usually get very far.
There was a Roman legion you talk about that had defeated everyone in its path and had, of course, taken on the Gauls and taken all over Europe and then disappeared as they went east.
Well, this is a very strange story. The worst disaster to befall the arms of ancient Rome happened in the Syrian desert when they were attacking the then was called the Parthian Empire. It was the Persian Empire. And 10,000 legionaries got captured and marched off into oblivion and settled, it seems, on the borders of Western China by the Persians. And people didn't take much notice of this until a rather eccentric Oxford professor some 60 years ago, burrowing through Chinese annals, discovered accounts of these strange mercenaries who were fighting for Hunnish chief and their habits of military formation and even military building of stockades were those of the ancient Romans. And at the same time, the Chinese annals come up with a little settlement is recorded called Lijian, which basically was synonymous with the Roman Empire. And so people got very excited about this a while ago, and the local Chinese were investigated by journalists who described them as tall and fair-haired, and there's all this stuff about them being the descendants of ancient Romans. I, of course, had to go and investigate this. And it was actually fascinating, this area, because you did meet people with certainly wavy sort of ginger hair and these rather unnerving pale eyes, pale green and sometimes even blue eyes, looking at you from quite comparatively European faces, high-bridged noses and so on. And you know, I began to sort of believe in this. But the more I thought about it, the more flawed the whole thing seemed to be. Because in fact, you know, Beijing geneticists have come out and found that many people here, about 25% of European ancestry, but there was so much movement in this part of the world that you could take such tests all along the Silk Road in this eastern half of it, and you'd come up with about the same results. So I'm afraid the ideas of Romans having penetrated into Western China is probably a fable. It's a lovely fable, but I think it's only that.
How important was religion along the Silk Road? Did you find that the contentions that are so strong in the West are as strong there?
You find many different sorts of Islam now. I mean, Islam, you realize, is just as varied as Christianity is. For instance, in the far east of the Silk Road, you find these people called Hui, who look indistinguishable from the Chinese, at least to me. They intermarried with the Chinese. They came along the Silk Road in the 7th century and later and were absorbed. But their descendants still practice Islam, but it's of a very much more Chinese color than anything we're familiar with. But then, you know, as you go west, you increasingly find an Islam which is more conventional. You find the great Shia shrines of Iran. It's very complicated. The more I traveled the Silk Road, the more complicated and interesting the people were. The borders were all strange and scrambled, and some of them seemed irrelevant ethnically.
You talk about the Great Wall in that context. It was, you say, built not to keep the rest of the world out, but to try to keep the Chinese in, an attempt in which it failed.
Yes, it's a rather unusual interpretation of the function of the Great Wall, but it does seem to have been like an enormous sort of definition, the Chinese love definitions, which was saying, it seems to me, within this wall is civilization. Here in the celestial kingdom, as they call China, is everything that matters. Outside is barbarism.
You wonder whether that's still effective today. I mean, is there still, do you think, a sense that civilization is on the Chinese side of the Great Wall?
I think there's a sense that among Chinese, a great superiority complex, which is a cultural one, in spite of all that happened to them in the 19th century, the humiliations, for instance, under British imperialism, they still feel, I think, that their culture is special, unique. They love to say that, you know, our culture is the oldest continuous civilization in the world.
You know, this leads me to another thing that struck me about your journey. We think of East to West as being Beijing to, I don't know, Rome, Paris, London. In fact, I got the sense that the West you're talking about is, to us, not West at all. It's Iran and Iraq and maybe Turkey as far west as you go.
Yes, this is Western Asia. You know, one's talking about this, the greatest continent on earth, Asia, and it spans, you know, Japan to Turkey. And the Silk Road traditionally ended on the Mediterranean at this great town in early times, in biblical times, of course, called Antioch. Now it's a smallish Turkish town called Antakya, and you go a few miles beyond it, and there's these ruins hanging above the Mediterranean. And this is the end of the Silk Road. There's a silted harbour with nothing in it, of course, from which St. Paul went on his first missionary journey, and that's where the silk took off for the Roman Empire and later across the Mediterranean. But there's nothing there. It's a little eerie, and that was the end of my journey among these ruined columns.
That's Colin Thubron, who's been called the Dean of British Travel Writers. His book is Shadow of the Silk Road.